Hello and welcome to season 3 of Mum's Work and Chaos. We all know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but where is that village? Well, I started this podcast to help you find yours, and I'm joined by some amazing guests this season, talking about subjects such as fast fashion, menopause, sex education, and teenage behaviour, just to name a few. So join me this season, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Mum's Work and Chaos. Today we're talking all about grief, particularly that grief that you feel when you lose a beloved family animal, family pet, whether that might be a dog, a cat, a hamster, guinea pig, rabbit, fish, who knows? You know, we all learn to love our animals and they become the companions that we all need. And it can be incredibly difficult when we lose them. So today I'm joined by the wonderful Beth, who will be talking to us, well, talking us through the whole process of grief and also how to broach that subject with other family members as well. So Beth, welcome.
Hey Louise.
It's fabulous to have you on today. Why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Sure. Well, my name is Beth Bigler, and I am a certified pet loss grief counselor. I also am a certified end-of-life animal companion doula. Some people know that as a death doula for animals. And I'm a pet chaplain. So basically, I work all day, every day with individuals and couples and families before, during, and after the loss of their animal companions. And as you know, Louise, you know what a tough thing this is to get through. And yeah. So many people find themselves at the crossroads of, I've just lost my animal. What do I do? And many people have no idea where to begin to move through this. So yeah. I'm there to help people adjust to this loss, to integrate it into their lives. And most importantly, to maintain a connection to their beloved.
It is such a weird experience. So we got... As you quite rightly said, we did lose and we lost our dog about 2.5 months ago now, which sounds crazy because that feels longer than it actually feels, which is very odd. But she was with us for just over 11 years. We got her when she was a puppy. She was a Rottweiler, so she was a big personality, to say the least. She took up space, both physically and in personality. And she was just the best, honestly. She was a very loving dog who knew what she wanted and generally got it. So there you go. But it was a long time coming. So she had arthritis. It basically like spread everywhere. We thought we were going to lose her about 6 months before we actually did. So she was struggling to get up. She was struggling to walk. We'd actually had to stop taking her for walks because the pain had got so bad. And then about 6 months before we actually lost her, she went through a really bad patch where she just couldn't even stand. She made a miraculous recovery, like quite a few other people's animals have. After talking about it with some friends on the school run, I found out that a lot of them had dogs who had passed and had similar situations where they'd been really ill and then all of a sudden seemed really, really a lot better, and then just deteriorated really quickly again. So we sort of like knew it was coming, but it was still a big shock when it actually did. And we had to make that final decision to say our goodbyes. There was literally nothing that the vets could do. And then my husband and I, we stayed with her and said our goodbyes and everything, and we stayed with her until the end. And then I found it very difficult to process it. Very difficult. I kept feeling like she was still there. I kept feeling like I could see her. And I just felt really empty and sort of hollow, like, because, you know, she was my first baby. We were only 25 when we got her.
and she was there before the kids, and the kids grew up with her and everything as well. And so it was really, really big blow. And then it came once we'd said our goodbyes and everything, then came the realization that we had to tell the kids. That was very strange. Actually having to work out how we broach that with them. I told my oldest, but I stupidly made the mistake of telling her before we'd gone to get my younger two from daycare. And so it meant that she was crying while we were collecting them. And then when we got home, my youngest noticed that she wasn't there, but my middle one didn't even really acknowledge the fact that she wasn't there, which I found quite difficult because I was like, hang on a sec, you didn't even notice she's gone. Like, she was a huge part of our lives, but we also experienced her differently. So to me, you know, she was always there, she was reliable. To the kids, she was a bit of a nuisance because she was always lying in the way, you know, nicking things she shouldn't nick, taking toys and stuff. And so, you know, your experiences are different with an animal as well. And so, but yeah, my youngest went to look for her and couldn't find her. And then a couple of weeks later, we worked out that my middle one did know that she wasn't there. She just didn't know how to say it. So they'd sort of like spoken to her at her daycare setting and spoken to her about it. And she came home and she was like, "Is Belle dead?" I was like, "Yes, sweetheart, she's dead." And she was like, "Oh." And that was sort of it, like, "Oh, she's gone." But you know, we go to church, we believe in God and everything as well. And so I think like my eldest has sort of like spoken to her about it as well. And she was kind of like, you know, Belle's gone to heaven. She's having a great time up there. It's all good. And and she's processed it in that way. You know, she's sort of like, Belle's in heaven, she's running around, she's having a great time. And so she's able to tell these stories to sort of like, I guess, soften the blow a little bit. And you know, and she's sort of, yeah, resigned to the fact that Belle's actually in a better place and that she's happier and healthier, and able to do all the things that she couldn't do at the end, like running around and stealing other people's tea towels again. So you know, it's just a difficult one, isn't it? Like, I honestly didn't know what to say. And so there was me bursting into tears every 5 seconds, like thinking that I'd seen her out the corner of my eye, or you know, just like remembering things. And I was like looking through photos on my phone of when she's like a little puppy and things like that as well. Whereas my husband dealt with it very differently. He had his cry at the vets. He had a bit of a cry when we scattered her ashes together. And that was sort of it. You know, he did mention like missing her and stuff as well, but not in the same way or to the same extent as me. He'd grown up with family pets and dogs and things. I hadn't. And so it was a very different experience for the both of us. And when we spoke before, when we were deciding whether we were going to do this or not, we were saying as well that I felt a bit frustrated because I felt like he wasn't able to express himself, but I think he just dealt with it in a different way, and there was a little bit of anger on my part from frustration from feeling like he couldn't talk to me about it, or like he didn't want to talk to me about it. So yeah, it was just the whole like sea of emotions and changes and then there was just a lot all at once. But like I said, you know, it wasn't massively unexpected, but you know, when it actually came to it, it felt very sudden. She deteriorated very quickly over the space of about a day and a half. And I knew that if we took her to the vets, she wasn't coming home with us. And so I think I'd spent most of the day that we, the day that we took her to the vets, in the run up to that, actually like already mourning, already saying goodbye. Because yeah, it was just like, it was just an inevitable outcome at that point. She couldn't stand, she couldn't walk. And so, yeah, it was just that sort of like inevitability just sort of like slammed into me. And it was just like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Got to say goodbye to this, to this person, you know, they have their own personalities and it's really difficult to not like, to not sort of like give them those human sort of like emotions and things as well, isn't it? It's very difficult not to sort of like think, oh well, they feel like this, so and right. That sort of stuff. So it's, yeah, I felt really upset that she was in so much pain, and then and I, you know, you just want to take it away, don't you? And that's kind of what you have to do, isn't it? So it's really, really, really difficult. But I guess you face that every day, don't you? You know, people either in the run up, and talking to you, or post, or even during, as you said, you know, being as you caught the phrase you mentioned, you know, as a death doula as well. Like like I'm guessing that involves you actually being with the pet as they pass as well.
Yes, I do attend euthanasia sometimes, both virtually and sometimes in person too, right? And sometimes it's very comforting for people to have someone else there who is just there to support both them and their animal, because the euthanasia decision, as you know, is a tough one. Even if you feel like it's time, you know it's the right thing to do, you feel like you're ending suffering, and it's never a completely clean decision that everyone feels great about, even if it's right, you know, and that's a really tough thing about euthanasia.
Yeah, it was a very, very tough decision to make, but you know that you're making the right choice when you see one in so much pain, but you still don't want them to leave. There's that selfish part of you, isn't there, that's like, no, don't go. Stay with me, don't leave. And that's, yeah, it's incredibly hard, isn't it? So I mean, like, as I said, you know, she was with us for a long time. She was ill, you know, really ill, and we all sort of knew that it was going to come, although we hadn't spoken to the kids about the fact that they knew that she wasn't well, but they didn't know that it would lead to death, as it were. And as I said, I felt all at sea. I didn't know what to do with how to talk to the kids or how to broach the subject. And and I sort of wanted to tell my eldest before we got home, so that she didn't like notice that Belle wasn't there. But then I also didn't want to tell her in front of the other girls, because my eldest is 7. My middle one's 3 and the youngest is 1. And so I didn't think that the youngest would actually understand that Belle's dead, you know, what that means. But then I didn't want my middle one to get upset about it all. And so I guess that there was part of me sort of trying to protect their feelings. But I honestly didn't have a clue how to broach the subject, how to bring it up with them, how to tell them. And yeah, I feel like part of me, I guess, still actually feels quite guilty about the way I told my eldest, and the way I went on to tell the others. There's part of me that feels like I did it all a bit the wrong way around. And I wondered if you might be able to give us some ideas of, you know, how to broach the subject with children, especially.
Absolutely. And I gotta tell you, Louise, the story you just told me, everything leading up to it, how hard it was, how you handled it with your kids. You did a great job. You got to remember, everybody has to remember this. We haven't been here before. You know, most of us, when we come to the point of losing our first adult, you know, I say adult instead of like the family dog, you know, your dog or your cat or your guinea pig, it's such a hard thing to navigate yourself, because, you know, for many of us, that's one of the most intimate and proximate and supportive relationships of our whole life, right? And so we are dealing with our own emotions. We may have a partner involved and we're trying to deal with their emotions. We're trying to do what's right for our animal. And now we have our kids in the mix, and we have to figure that out, right? So anything we don't do, quote, perfectly, you know, you learn from that. You learn maybe what you'd like to do next time. You learn, you know, maybe some new strategies, things to try. But, you know, guilt implies that we've done something wrong or we've caused harm, and you didn't cause any harm here. You didn't do anything wrong. So I just want to let you off that guilt hook a little bit, right? It may be like, hey, I'd like to do it differently in the future, but that doesn't mean you did anything wrong. You certainly haven't betrayed Belle. You certainly haven't scarred your kids for life, right? It's just, it's a very difficult thing. You've never done it before. And so just a little more self-kindness, self-compassion coming in. I got to call you out
Thank you. Just
a bit. but you know, the way I like to think about this, I really love to think about this as an opportunity, right? This moment where death comes very close to your family, for many kids, this is their first exposure to death and grief and loss, right? So we get to be the models, you know, as the moms, right? We get to show them, teach them. We show them how to adjust to this. We show them how to integrate this loss into our lives. We show them how to celebrate our beloved. We are teaching them how to grieve. We are teaching them how to mourn. And this is a skill that our children are going to need their entire lives. So I always frame this for people like, hey, we got a great opportunity here to step up and show our kids how it's done, right?
Yeah.
So I also always like to say, before I give any recommendations, that you know your kids best, right? So, you know, everyone's kids are different, and kids from the same family can be super different. So you always want to kind of go at the pace of your kid. You know your kid best. But the key headlines are, let's inform them. Let's include them. Let's be honest with them. Let's answer every question they have. And let's make any feelings that come up, no matter what they are, even if they're surprising to us, let's make those feelings allowed and okay. Those are sort of the headlines, right? And one of your challenges here, and many of us with kids with different ages, is that really before about age 7 or 8 sometimes, death is very hard to grasp as like a permanent concept, right?
Yeah.
So your oldest is kind of on the cusp of like being able to grasp that, because even between ages of like 8 and 13, you know, a lot of kids know it's permanent, but there's still a bit of magical thinking that happens around it. And then, you know, kind of into the teenage years, it's the clear understanding of what death is, but still brings up a lot of powerful emotions. And especially for your little ones, you know, they it's very hard for them to understand the permanence of it, right? And that's just always something to remember when you have like toddlers and things and they keep coming back, you know, asking, you know, when's Belle going to come back or any of that, like that's very age appropriate and very normal. So you also have to kind of modify what we're doing here for each age group, right? So in terms of what we might say to kids, and this depends, you know, again, it's different if it's like a very sudden thing versus a long-term thing, but I like to be very honest with kids. I don't recommend using euphemisms. I don't recommend saying, they went to live somewhere else, or they went to live on a farm or anything like that. And a lot of people do this, so I have to mention it, right? And I also don't recommend saying put to sleep or put down.
No.
Right. Because sometimes that makes kids very afraid of sleeping. Right. So I like to keep it for the younger ones. I just like to keep things very simple. If it is something more sudden and sort of unexpected, we can indicate that, you know, something happened, if it was an accident or a sudden illness and, you know, Belle's body stopped working and she died. You know, I believe with kids, very important to say she died, right? So that we understand that what that word means, we're working on learning what that word means and we're clear about it, you know? And if an animal's older, I like to say something like, you know, Belle was very old. And when animals get old, their bodies sometimes stop working, right? And they stop working properly, right? So and for a lot of kids, that'll do it. You know, less is more sometimes. We want to be honest, but we don't need to go into a lot of detail. Now, if you want to explain about a euthanasia decision, or you have a lead up to this, which I'll talk about in a minute, with your kids knowing that a euthanasia will be happening and potentially even attending it, it's good to explain what euthanasia is. Belle is suffering. She can't move the way she wants to move. You know, her body's not working properly. So we're choosing to help her by helping her die. And it's a sad choice, but she's very sick and she is going to die. And so the doctor is going to give some medicine that's just for animals, and that's going to stop her heart and her body will stop working and she will not be in pain and she will die, right? Just something simple like that, if you are preparing your kids for a euthanasia or need to explain it, right?
Yeah.
And so being direct, being, giving them the truth in terms they can understand is thing number one that I would say. How do those resonate with you? How do those feel?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I specifically also didn't use the term put to sleep because of that reason. I didn't want to scare my daughter into not sleeping, and that was part of it. We didn't talk about a farm or anything like that, because again, it does sound like that she's coming back. And my eldest goes to a Church of England school, as well as attending church as well. So she knows that heaven is like a separate place where you go when you die, and that you can't come back from heaven. That's it. So that offered that sort of permanency as well. Again, like I said, we were quite lucky that she had the tools already in place to sort of understand what was going on. But I think, like, although we knew everything was sort of coming to a head, I think part of us, the kids were all at school and at daycare and everything, and I guess part of us was still hopeful that she was still going to come home. We didn't talk to them about it in the lead up to it, because we literally made the vet's appointment at like 11 in the morning and we took her at 3. Mm-hmm. We couldn't sort of talk about it in the lead up. We did say that she wasn't well and that we were going to take her to the vets. That's as far as my eldest knew. Because she'd been panting a lot over the last day. Mm-hmm. And she'd been crying in the night as well, and ended up coming to stay in our room with us, which is unusual. But she was in pain and she was really upset. And so that last night she'd been in our room with us. Mm-hmm. And then she'd been in our workspace with us as well, because we both work from home. So she'd mm-hmm. been in our office with us during the day as well. She just wanted that proximity. And I said to you this to you before as well. I feel like she sort of knew that it was that her life was coming to an end, because she'd been everywhere. She was just everywhere we were. Mm-hmm. You turn around and there she was. She was just like in everyone's way, taking up this space, just everywhere. She was doing silly things like when she was a puppy, she used to rub her head against my leg to sort of like get that comfort and be like, I'm here. I want a stroke, come and stroke me, kind of thing. And she'd become this craggy old grumpy lady, and she didn't want to be touched all the time. She part of her did want to be like left alone and left to do her own thing. And I'd noticed this unusual behavior again, like she turned into this like little puppy again. She just wanted to be touched and loved, and she was even encouraging the kids to touch her, which was unusual, because she was in so much pain in her hips and her back legs that if the kids went anywhere near there, she was just like a grump and she'd have a little rumble and then she'd walk away. Find somewhere else to go where the kids weren't. But again, like I said, she was just like in everyone's space. She just wanted to be around everyone constantly for that last week running up to it. So you know that we've got the joys of hindsight, haven't you? So we can look back at all of that now and see, like, the signs were there. She was trying to tell us something. She was saying her goodbyes, essentially. Mm-hmm. Yes. But like at the time, you're busy, you're doing stuff, you don't even notice, do you? And then that again, that guilt sort of pops in, like, oh, I should have should have paid her a bit more attention, should have, you know, given her something special to eat. I don't know. It's like,
well, you
didn't, like,
you
all
didn't
this...
have the crystal ball, you know, you
No.
didn't have the crystal ball, you didn't know. And of course, there was a part of you that didn't want to know, right? So it's very confusing. And, you know, one of the things with kids is just kind of normalizing this from day one, you know, even, you know, my poor son, my son's 4 years old, right? And ever since he was a baby, you know, if we found an animal outside who had died, we would, you know, bury the animal and say some nice words about it. We've been doing animal funerals, you know, constantly. And I talk to him about death all the time. And you know, so I think like there's also a piece here where, you know, there's a lot of great books and I can, you know, send a list your way. Louise, you can share them if there's a way we can share, you know, with the listeners.
Yeah, of course.
So many listeners or so many books rather that can be supportive that you can start reading to your kids before you have a sick animal. Just, you know, normalizing the idea that our pets do die. And when you have an animal who you know is aging and you know probably doesn't have years left, or, you know, you can do things with your family to sort of commemorate that, you know. I think having milestone birthdays when our animals get to a certain age is just lovely, to sort of have a birthday party for the animal and just really celebrate them, take pictures, have a day that's just all about them. If you know you have a diagnosis, some people love the idea of doing kind of like a bucket list, you know, for their animal, where they get to do fun things, go on fun adventures, that kind of thing. Some, depending on your situation, some people love having sort of like a farewell party. You know, if we know an animal has a diagnosis and they don't have much time, you know, just bringing everybody together to sort of say goodbye. I also love having a family journal about your animal, regardless of how old they are or if they're well or not well, where everyone can contribute, writing, you know, when you all get together, memories of your animal while they're still here. That will become a really special item to have after they die. And it's a really fun project for your whole family to work on. So there are certainly things to do leading up to this, but also afterward, you know, helping your kids make drawings, make pictures, make scrapbooks, you know, doing memorial activities, making altars that the kids can bring items to. I love rock painting. I love, you know, getting rocks and doing different painting tributes, and you can do something outdoors in the garden for your animal or you know, make a little space outdoors to remember them. And, you know, keeping your animal included in holidays, you know, when you have a family toast at a meal at a Christmas or a Thanksgiving, make sure you say the animal's name, you know, really showing your kids that while they're no longer earthside, they are still here with us in spirit, and we remember them and honor them and love them. And that's also really powerful to help kids grieve, because kids grieve differently than humans. And it's not going to look like how humans grieve, but keeping the animal included in your day-to-day, letting your kids know it's okay for us to still think about them, talk about them, celebrate, remember them. Those are all really important, wonderful things to teach them now that will help them as they grow.
We, a beautiful friend of mine had a little plaque made for her because she knew that we wanted to keep a little bit of the ashes aside to put in our garden, but we wanted, you know, we wanted the majority of her to be in a happy place. And so and also, like, you know there's never a permanency with residents, is there? And I didn't want to sort of like leave her behind, but also I didn't want the whole, you know, urn on the mantelpiece reminder kind of thing.
Right.
So what we did was, you know, probably about 3/4 of her is at a lake nearby that we go for walks at, which is lovely, so we can still like see her when we're going for our walks and stuff. And then we kept a tiny part of her aside, because in the box with the ashes and everything, the crematorium also gave us some flower seeds as well. So they put in some forget-me-not seeds, so that we can plant those at the same time. So we've kept a tiny little bit aside for that. So we're going to plant the seeds with the ashes and then put the plaque up in the back garden as well. So, but it's something that we could take with us too, you know. So if we do move, she can, we've still got that commemorative sign and everything that we can take with us. But
beautiful.
It was just such a thoughtful, beautiful gift. And this friend, she thinks of everyone but herself, you know. She's one of those really selfless people. She's wonderful. But we've got this plaque, we've got the seeds and everything that we can plant together, And so that's one way that I wanted to include the kids. We didn't include the kids when we were scattering the ashes at the lake, because part of us felt like, you know, I felt like, you know, she was ours, you know, mostly, like, you know, mine and my husband's. And so part of us was like, no, we want that experience to be private and just for us. But then with the flowers and everything, we can include the kids in that, so they can scatter the seeds and stuff as well, which would be really lovely. But she, my, we were taking, so since we said our goodbyes to Belle, it just felt like this really incredibly large hole that was really hard to fill. And I felt like, my husband went on a night out and I was left at home on my own, which was literally the night after we'd said our goodbyes. And so it was really difficult for me being on my own, because, like, usually she'd like follow me around the house. So, like, wherever I was going, she'd like get up and go, or at least I knew she was there, you know. And so she was like my shadow. She'd sort of like follow me around, and a part of me felt, you know, safer for it, but also like, I was just never like alone, which was lovely. And so we did make the decision to get another dog. And he's lovely. He's a very cute puppy, but he's a puppy, which can be quite frustrating at times. And so we have had a lot of those sorts of questions, like, oh, did Belle do this? Or did Belle used to do that when Belle was a puppy? Did she do this? And it's been quite lovely, actually, like remembering those those times, and like going back and looking at pictures and stuff like that. And we used to celebrate her birthday. So like we'd get her, you know, we'd give her a special dinner. So we might, you know, give her some sardines and things that she really, really loved. And got so many pictures of her with candles in her dog bowl and, you know, the party hats and everything on. And it's just really funny. Yes. So we did used to do all of that. we were those doggy parents. We've got all those sorts of fun memories as well. And then I walked my daughter to her friend's house, and we took Kevin, our new dog, with us. he was trotting along, and my oldest was like, oh, did Belle used to do this? Did Belle used to do that? Did Belle used to do the other? And it was really nice. She felt like she could ask me those questions and she was going to get honest answers, which was lovely. But also, part of me was happy to remember, you know, because you do worry that you're going to forget, don't you? And actually, like,
yes,
having the prompts to remember these things was actually really lovely, as well as, like, you know, going, oh yeah, she did used to do that, oh, she would sniff everything, oh, she was, you know, yes. All of that sort of stuff. And so yeah, it was really lovely to be able to talk to her about it. But yeah, with my middle one, like I was saying, she's like, oh, you know, was Belle died? And we were like, yes, yeah. So we sort of just explained that she's not coming back and that she wasn't very well. And she was sort of like we'd discussed how she wasn't well, you know, in the run-up to everything anyway. We've had those discussions about, you know, oh, don't touch her there, she doesn't like it, it hurts, or oh, she's not feeling very well today, we'll just let her have a rest, or oh, we took her for a walk and it was just too much, so we just got to let her rest now, and we'll just leave her alone, and she's not very well, we've just got to give her some space. And so I think, you know, she was aware that Belle wasn't well, and so actually it's not so bad that she's not there anymore, because actually she's better for it. And my youngest, she saw a picture of Belle on my phone, and she was like, oh, Belle. I was like, yeah, Belle. And she just gave me a really big hug. And like I was saying, she's not even two yet. She's two in November, and she just gave me this really big hug. And that was lovely. So I think that she does understand that she's not there anymore.
Yeah.
But it's just difficult to sort of articulate it with, with children who are so young as well,
yes.
isn't it? And trying to know what the best thing to say is.
Yeah.
But also I guess, you know, I sort of alluded to it earlier, like everyone's grief in our house was different. It all looked different. It all felt different. And
yes.
So like my oldest was upset for a couple of days. But as I said, she had all the tools there to process it and was just like, mm-hmm. She's cool. It's happened. Like I miss
right.
her, but she's happy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, right. Okay. And then part of me was frustrated that my middle one hadn't even noticed that she wasn't there.
Right.
And then another part of me was a bit angry that my husband wasn't as upset as I was, you know?
Yeah.
And then also, I guess that I felt silly for being so upset because, you know, she was a dog, you know, it wasn't like I'd lost my nan or my best friend or anyone. I lost my dog. But, you know, my mum was talking to me about it. She was like, Belle had a whole personality. She was a person. Like, it's okay to grieve for her as if she was a person, because to you, she was. She was your friend. So there's no shame in feeling like that. And I realised that, yeah, I had felt a little bit ashamed for missing her in the way that I did. Because, yeah, as I said, you know, it's difficult to sort of, like, get it through your head that actually to you they are a person, to you they are a full personality and a friend, and you can talk to them about whatever you want, and you're,
yes.
you're not going to get an answer back necessarily,
right? Well, yeah, our animals, they never judge us, they never hold us up to some ridiculous high expectation of who we're supposed to be. They do hold our secrets in confidence. They love us regardless of if we've had a good day or bad day, or succeeded or not succeeded. They are truly loving and giving, and for many people teach what unconditional love truly feels like, because not everybody grows up in a household where they feel accepted and nurtured and loved all the time. So for many people, you know, the relationship with their animals helps heal and repair things that maybe you didn't get before. So it's a huge deal for everyone who loves their animal when they die.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Like, you feel like you have to, I guess part of me felt like I had to justify my grief, like, go, you know, it's okay to feel like that. You know, she, to me, this was who she was. I guess also part of me didn't want to look silly at the school gates when people asked me how I was and everything. And it's hard, you know, you sort of want to put a brave face on it, don't you? The joys of being British and the stiff upper lip culture that comes with that. But, you know, I did break down quite a bit. And I kept thinking that I could see her out the corner of my eye, or the actual day that we had to say goodbye. I came home and I was hoovering. I just had to do something, you know. I couldn't concentrate on work. And so the least I could do was like the mindless tasks of cleaning and tidying and everything. So I was hoovering. And I thought I saw her shadow outside the kitchen door. We have like frosted glass on the kitchen door, and it leads out into the garden. And so, you know, if I was hoovering, she'd wait outside because she hated the Hoover.
Yes, of course.
And so I guess I felt like I saw her, and it just caught me off guard, and I cried. And then that night, I had to go into the kitchen to get something. And she slept in the kitchen at night. And so I opened the kitchen door and I could swear she was there,
mm-hmm.
like just there in the middle of the floor. And it just looked like, you know, when the moonlight comes in, it hits, and it just looked like that. And I was like, it gave me the fright of my life. I was so shocked to see her there. And it was almost like she just like whooshed past me, and that was it. That was the last time I really saw her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like every now and again, I thought I I thought I'd seen her, and then it was like, oh, it was just the watering can outside, or oh, it was just a bird or whatever. But yeah, those were the two times that I like couldn't justify it. I couldn't say like that wasn't her.
Right.
And that was so weird. It was like she'd sort of like hung around just to say her final goodbyes. And but until we scattered her ashes, I didn't have that full closure. Mm-hmm. And it really, really felt like she was sort of hanging around. Like I could hear, I thought I'd heard her panting or like poor steps around the house and things like that. It was really surreal, really odd. And then yeah, the day that we scattered her ashes, it was like completely different. Felt like she wasn't there anymore. And like she'd really gone. And that, even that in itself was difficult, but almost felt like a relief. Like, okay, she's happy, she's gone now. Like, we're cool.
Right.
You know, well, she's...
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, first of all, I'm a big believer. I have to be anecdotally, because I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of people through their grief. And anecdotally, we know there are visitations, there are signs, there are things that happen that are unexplainable. And whenever anyone gets a sign or a visitation, I tell everyone, say, thank you. Thanks, Belle. Come again. Or thank you more, please. Right. Because certainly many things happen like this that we can't explain. And we also know from a research perspective that our brain is the most impacted organ of all of our organs during grief. Our brain has a very hard time, particularly with pet loss, because of how ingrained our beloved is into our daily routine, right? And so we also know that our neurons really struggle because they're still firing for the old neural pathways of the interaction with, you know, seeing Belle everywhere and hearing Belle everywhere.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the brain research shows that, you know, your brain can also, you know, play some tricks on you like that as well. And who's to say what's a combination of mystical or visitation or spiritual versus our brain doing its thing? But you know, your experience is definitely resonant with many, many people I have worked with, where, and for some people, they don't like it. You know, some people are like, oh, I feel like I'm going nuts, right? Because I'm seeing things, I'm hearing things, and I'm like, you're grieving. This is part of grief. It's part of the physical side of grief, that we have many physical experiences and symptoms that are not easy to explain.
It's really tricky though, isn't it? Because like, you know, I always lean towards the more scientific, you know, it's just your brain playing tricks on you. But that night, I just couldn't explain it. And, you know, so although we go to church and we believe in God and everything, like, I still feel like, you know, I'm quite a logical thinker, quite a scientific thinker in that way. And so, you know, I still think, you know, oh, you know, once someone's gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't wrap my head around that one. It took me a couple of days to just go, oh, well, maybe it was her.
Maybe. We don't know how it works, right? All of that stuff is above my pay grade. It's above your pay grade. And I, you know, grief can be a very destabilizing thing in some ways for people, because many of the things that many of us believed or thought we believed or felt certain about, suddenly things like this happen and we're like, that's new, that's different. And it can be a little jarring or scary, but it can also, again, like, be a big opportunity for growth or for expanding our view of things and for being even more empathetic to other views, right? So it is, you know, if I had a dime for every time someone told me, well, this thing happened and I don't have a way to explain it, I'm like, yeah, like, this is part of it. And I think it's a really neat moment for us to say, hey, maybe we don't have it all figured out. Maybe we're going to remain more open to possibility. And, you know, again, above our pay grade, maybe we'll find the answer someday. But in the meantime, I always say to people, as long as it's a pleasant experience, let's enjoy it. Let's be grateful Belle showed up for you in that way, because that was big for you.
It's really difficult, isn't it? It's really hard to sort of like pinpoint those sorts of things. And I can understand why some people feel a bit scared by it all, because like, you know, it's and why they might feel like they're going a bit crazy. Like my manager at work, she was saying to me, oh, I still here, like my husband still hears the dog, and he passed like 6 months ago and he still hears him walking around, and like in the evening he's like, oh, did you hear that? And he can hear him padding around in the evening. And it's crazy, isn't it, to think that. But like you said, you know, you sort of, they're so ingrained in your routine that it might be that they would go to the toilet at a certain time every night, and so you automatically end up like getting up and thinking, yeah, oh, I need to take them out, but they're not there anymore. Or right, like you know, it might be that you used to take them for a walk at a certain time, and so you go off and get their lead, or you give them their dinner at a certain time, and it was when you eat, but you'd still get up and you're like, oh, actually I'm in the kitchen for the wrong reason, I shouldn't be here right now. Like, or you know, it's crazy stuff, isn't it? Yeah. Thinking that you've got all these things that are just so ingrained in your everyday life, they become habit. And so you've almost got to then break those habits, haven't you? So it's there's a lot of unpacking to do. It's not just saying goodbye to a person, personality, pet. It's also like unraveling all those things, that all those learned behaviors you've taken on to please and appease your animal.
That's right.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and I recommend in the beginning in particular to not change any of those routines, right?
Yeah.
Your brain still wants to do them. Your brain still wants to put down the food bowl. Your brain still wants to go for the walk. And I encourage the grief counseling clients that I work with, I encourage everyone to keep up with those routines in the beginning in particular, right? Because naturally your brain wants to do it. And I say, let's turn this into a moment to connect with Belle, right? So you may walk into the kitchen and think, oh, this would be the time I would feed Belle. And before you can get that sort of that pang in your stomach or that wave of grief of, oh, but she's not here, before you get that, you can say, you know what? I'm just going to fill up that water bowl and put it down. I know she's not going to drink it, but as an honoring of Belle, I'm just going to put that down and say, I love you, sweetie. I'm thinking about you, you know, or I'm going to take her leash with me, or her collar or her favorite toy. And I'm going to go on that walk and I'm going to think about her on the walk, or I'm going to listen to some music that reminds me of her on the walk. And, you know, kind of taking these day-to-day routines that sometimes if we go to do them sort of subconsciously, they can make us feel sad. I'm a real believer in trying to turn those routines into moments of connection and opportunity and continuing your relationship. So that's something that, you know, some people think, well, I do have to break all those habits right away. And I say, no, not just yet. You know, let's give it some time as you start to integrate this, because we got a lot of other things going on with our grief. We have plenty else going on. Let's keep things the same as much as possible in the beginning. And adjust to it slowly is my recommendation.
Yeah, it's such a huge adjustment, isn't it? And there's loads of different things that we need to take account of when we're going through all of this sort of stuff. But yeah, as I sort of said, you know, we did end up getting another dog, and he's, as I said, he's beautiful and he's a lovely personality, and he's a bit of a scamp, but overall he's very lovely and he's great with the kids. But I think, you know, when we were talking about it, like my husband was just like, you know, I'm so used to having a dog, I'd really like to get another dog. And part of me was worried that it would feel like we were trying to replace her. But you know, I had that night where he wasn't there and I felt really lonely. And then there was another couple of times where I'd been on my own during the day in the house and in the evening. And I really felt that sort of like emptiness, that loneliness. And it wasn't, I guess part of me wanted to fill that space, but also, like, you know, after 11 and a half years of having her, I knew the benefits of having a dog, like having that companionship. And with my husband's job, the traveling and things is going to start ramping up soon. And so it's going to get to that point where I'm more and more on my own with the kids. And I just thought, you know, I do want that companion. I do want that friend there watching the telly with me in the evening and things like that. And so we didn't take it lightly. Mm-hmm. We'd really done our research and we'd really like looked about, but there was this particular litter and we'd fallen in love, but there weren't any dogs left. They'd sold them all except one who they were going to keep for their own family. But we'd been talking to them and we'd done like all the backgroundy bits for them as well. We'd sent them pictures of the garden and they'd seen like sort of where we'd lived and the situation that you know, a puppy would come into if they did choose us, you know, because they had loads of people inquiring about these animals. Mm-hmm. And then they had to make the tough decision to not keep the puppy because their family circumstances changed. Mm. And so they contacted us and they were like, actually, if you're still looking, we'd love for him to come and live with you. Mm. We really think that he'd have a great life with you. You've got a huge garden, you know, field out the back of your house, and you know, you've got the kids will love him. He's a really lovely dog. And so we went to go and meet him, and he kind of, bits of him reminded me of her. Like, you know, he was very affectionate. He gravitated towards me straight away. And I was just like, mm-hmm. Oh God, it's really annoying. Cause like, I wasn't 100% we were taking you home, but now we are. As well as all of that came with it, the idea of, oh no, we've got to train another animal. Oh no, mm-hmm. It's a lot of responsibility. Oh no, we've got the three girls. What do we do? But it felt really simple when we were there and we met him and we've made mm-hmm. that decision to take him with us. But it's really difficult decision to make. Like, you know, part of me really wanted, you know, another pet, another dog. But then also part of me felt like there was that guilt, that sort of like, oh no, are we trying to replace Belle? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I feel like I could say no, we aren't trying to replace her. We just, you know, really wanted another pet. Mm-hmm. But there's still that element that comes with it, isn't there? It's really difficult to sort of like justify it. And when we were talking previously, we were saying, you know, that some people actually come to you after they've got another pet, don't they? And they're concerned about like, oh no, what have I done? Mm-hmm. What should I do? Mm-hmm. I've got this other pet, or my husband really wanted it, or my wife really wanted it, and I didn't want it. And that sort of comes out a lot in your like couples work, doesn't it? That goes with the whole grief and loss element. So what is it? What sort of things do you usually see when this sort of thing arises and comes up?
Sure. Yeah. At least once a day, I've got a session that has something to do with welcoming a new animal, or the new animal's already here, you know, or are we ready? You know, am I ready is a big topic, right? And, you know, first of all, this is just so deeply, deeply, deeply personal to people, right? And I have seen people who love their animals very much go out the next day and adopt another animal, and it works out great, right? And then I've also seen people who wait a long time, many years. I personally waited 3.5 years after my soulmate died to welcome new animals. And that's okay too, right? It's deeply personal. So there's no like one time frame or, you know, blanket piece of advice. However, there are some guidelines that I always like to say to people when they're thinking about this idea, you know, can I welcome a new animal? Am I ready? Is it a good idea? And yes, it comes up as a big conflict with couples a lot too. You know, one thing that you're talking about that I address all the time is this idea of guilt. Am I replacing them? Am I getting another animal so they will be like my first animal, right? And I always say about the guilt piece, we're back to the guilt, you know, doing harm, you know, your relationship with Belle, right? Your relationship with Belle is unique. It's singular. It's perfect. It's protected, right? You and Belle and all that you went through and all that you shared together and all those years together, that cannot be replaced. It cannot be compared. And it is protected. It's sacred. Yeah. Between the two of you, that bond. And that's true of you and Belle. It's true of me and Arnie. It's true of, you know, all of us with our beloveds. So, you know, we need to release that idea that we are somehow betraying the relationship by welcoming a new animal. That, to me, that's not a thing because your relationship with Belle is still strong. It's still beautiful. It's still protected, regardless of who's living in your house, right?
Yeah.
So that's something to work on releasing. But the other piece in there is an expectation piece. And that's the thing that I really urge people to consider carefully. Oftentimes people have an expectation that when they welcome a new animal, that that animal is going to fill the paws of the previous animal.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that this new animal has their own personality, their own strengths, their own weaknesses, their own gifts and guidance and lessons and teachings, and their own set of challenges, right?
Mm.
So you have to be very prepared. I tell people, you know, put on the mindset that your new dog is going to be a 180. From your former dog.
Oh,
do
yeah.
not expect that you're going to have a cuddle bug at night while you're watching TV. That's not necessarily who you're going to get. Now, obviously you can, you know, try to, you know, look for personality types and things, but you have to really just erase your expectations that the new animal is going to be like the old animal. And that's much easier said than done. And that's why sometimes I do, like with people I'm working with, I do recommend that they really feel moved through their grief. They feel like they've adjusted well. They're not deep in guilt or shame or regret about their grief. They're not, you know, really feeling a lot of that acute pain, because it's very hard to lower those expectations and welcome a new animal when you are in that acute grief. Another piece between couples in particular, but even if you're on your own, I always say, like, listen to the no.
Mm.
Like, if you're having a no or an I don't think I'm ready, I'm not quite ready. I mean, here are all the reasons why, yes, but if you've got some actual no's, I really find it important to honor those no's and listen to those no's and do not proceed while you still have those no's in you. Because in my experience, having done this now a long time, if you adopt when you still have some of those no's going on, there's going to be a barrier. There may be a barrier for you bonding with the new animal. There may be a barrier, a lot of comparison going on. There may be just you don't have the bandwidth. You don't have the capacity. Mm. You know, puppies require so much effort. And, you know, a lot of people go from having a 15-year-old cat or dog, you know, to having kitten or puppy. And it's such a big change.
Yeah.
And you're already tired. You're grieving. You're exhausted. So you really got to be careful about that and your own protecting your own bandwidth and capacity. And so many people, when they lose a beloved, it's like a piece of their identity is gone. And for a lot of people, you know, there's a real mission and purpose and sense of, you know, identity that's connected to their animal. And so they think if I have another animal, that piece will be filled. And that may not be true either. And it's not really fair to a new animal to put all that expectation on them, that all these things that are, you know, that you're having trouble with, that they're going to fill that. So those are some of the things, the questions I like to bring up and, you know, really just work through and talk through before you bring a new animal in. But there's one caveat. You got to double check. Is it a no or is it grief? Right? Because the ultimate sign that your beloved is never coming back, even if you feel like you've accepted that, is when you bring a new animal home. And so sometimes when people are in this process and they're going to bring the new animal home, the minute that animal comes in the house, there's just a lump in your throat or there's a wave of just pain. And so a lot of people are like, oh, is that a no? You know, did I miss it? And it's not a no. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It doesn't mean you did the wrong thing. It means, you know, Belle's never coming home. Arnie's never coming home. And a lot of people like get scared when they feel that grief. And I always warn people, when you bring that new animal home, you're going to have grief coming up. And that's okay. That's your grief. That's not a no.
Yeah.
And then once the animal's here, you gotta, you know, pace yourself and be kind with yourself about the bond. You know, you cannot step into a new relationship with a new animal and have that deep connection that you had with an animal that was there for 10 or 12 or 15 years. It's not going to be the same. And we have to, you know, really honor that the animal, I believe all animals come into our lives for a reason. They have something to teach us. They have something to share with us, and they're going to stay in our life for the duration they're meant to stay in our lives. But sometimes we're slow to connect after a loss. And so to just, you know, be very kind and gentle and graceful with yourself. If it's not an instant love affair, if it is, great, go for it. But if you're having trouble, I just like to validate, like, you know, like for me personally, I've had, you know, two new animals in my home for a year and a half, and I'm still figuring it out. I'm still figuring out who they are. I'm still figuring out how they work in our family. And I don't feel as deeply bonded to them the way I did about Arnie or my 19-year-old cat Zelda, who died in May. You know, I don't have that same bond, but that's okay. That's not something for me to be hard on myself about. I'm learning them. They're learning me. They're adjusting to our family. And so I always like to say that too, just to be kind and gentle to yourself and allow it to unfold in its own time and pace.
I think that's totally right, isn't it? They're completely different personalities. And if you think that like you said earlier on, as well, like even the different kids in the same house can be completely different. And they all are. It was really funny because on another podcast I was talking to someone about how I'd been watching a reel on Instagram, and they were saying, oh, you know, but you're the eldest child, your sister is the youngest child, and you had completely different experiences growing up. So your childhood is completely different to hers, and the way she grew up and what she experienced. And it's the same with my kids. Their experience of growing up are very different. You know, my eldest was the first. Everything was tried out on her before we learned how to do it with the middle one, and again learned how to do it with the youngest one, and to suit different discipline methods with different behaviors, with different personalities, and all of that fun stuff. I'm the eldest. I'm happy to say that I was the guinea pig child, and you know, I've made my peace with that. I was the one that was tested on. They didn't have any. My parents didn't have a clue at the beginning either, and no one does. And it's the same with bringing a new animal into the house as well. They're going to have a different personality. The way they learn is different, like between breeds as well. So like my Rottie was stubborn. You know, she knew what she wanted and how to get it. And, you know, if that meant just playing dead in the middle of the kitchen floor to get a treat, then she would. Or she would lay down and wait for her belly to be rubbed. That's the way she was. She wanted to be loved on her terms. And that was the way it was going to happen. Whereas Kevin is half Cocker Spaniel, half Dalmatian. And so he's really keen and eager to please. He wants to learn, and he's also full of energy. And so he can go shooting up and down the back garden as much as he wants. But equally, he's already, like, I walked him, I took him on his first proper outside walk on the street earlier, and he stayed next to me the whole time because he was like, I really want to please her, I really want to make her happy. Whereas my Rottweiler, she would do it because she was like, I'm the boss, I'm setting the pace, actually you're walking to heel with me, so this is working. And they're completely different personalities, and I had I had no expectations when he came into the house. I think that was part of welcoming him, was not holding him up to that same mantle, because otherwise, you know, if you have one child and then you bring home another child and you're sitting there constantly comparing them, oh well, she was walking at this age, and she was doing this at this age, and she was doing that at the other, and oh well, your younger sister walked before you did, it's we can't be like that. Everyone does things at their own pace in their own way, and that's the same with our animals as well, and we have to recognize that, and also recognize the traits that come with the breeds that they are, and so on, and the way that they've been, you know, built as it were. And so it's such an important point to you know, make that space for them to come and learn their place within the family and how they fit in as well, because like my mum said, they're people too, they have personalities, and they want that love and that respect and everything as well. And so, it's a hard choice. And again, like you said, you suddenly get that wave of grief. Like, you know, I was really happy to bring him home, but then also I then missed her again. Yes. And that was okay. You know, we were both my husband and I were lying in bed one night, and he was on the floor next to us, in his crate. So we're crate training him, but we had him in the room with us. We've slowly been moving him further and further off. He's got his own space. He's happy now. He's fully settled into the home, which is great. But he, that first night he was with us, and I was just sitting there in bed, and I was just, I really miss her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like all of a sudden it just hit me again. And I was like, I just really miss her. And he was like, I miss her too. Mm-hmm. He said, I do. But I can't just sit there missing her. I have to carry on. And I was like, suddenly I sort of understood. I was like, right, okay. You've been doing it. You've been cleaning. I had to clean and tidy to sort of like get through that first couple of days.
Yep.
Whereas he just had to carry on, and that was his version of cleaning and doing the mindless tasks. It was actually just burying his head in his work and carrying on and just carrying on like normal. That's what he had to do to get through it. And that was my sudden realization that actually he did feel the same way. He was just coping with it in a different way. And that was sort of when the frustration kind of cleared, that, you know, 4 weeks afterwards, suddenly it was like, oh, okay. That's how you've been coping. That's how you've been dealing with it. But it's just so tough, isn't it? When they don't bloody communicate with you. Can't get
about
the
all
words
things
out. Yeah, exactly. but we got there in the end, and that's what really matters. But when I shared on my Instagram page that we'd had to say our goodbyes, quite a few people reached out to me to say that they had pets that were nearing the end of life or already receiving like palliative care and stuff like that, and it was just a matter of time, and that they didn't know how to broach the subject with their loved ones, whether that be a partner or a child or things like that. And that's why I felt like it was so important to reach out to you and to do this episode, because, you know, it was, is, still is hard, because I love the way you put it, your soulmate pet. She really was. She was a huge part of me and my sort of my independence as well, you know, my first foray into adulthood. You know, we only just moved in together, bought a house and everything, and then she joined us nearly immediately.
Right.
And so it was a huge thing to say goodbye, because she'd been there that whole time. And so, you know, it was, is, still will be, a huge loss. And so I just really wanted to reach out and do this episode so that other people would be able to sort of get their heads around it and understand and sort of find their own way to deal with it and really work out how they wanted to broach the subject, because I think in a lot of cases, you know, it's that inevitability, isn't it? But then also, you know, if there is a sudden death, you know, how do we talk about that? How do we broach that with our children and our partners and our loved ones? And I really feel like we've done that here today. So thank you so much, Beth, for joining me. But, you know, since reaching out to you anyway, I've been hanging out a lot on your Instagram page, and do you know what really hit me was, although, you know, you discuss death and you talk about death and everything, it's a really colourful and comfortable place to be. It's not somewhere where you're going to go and it's all like sadness and wallowing. It's a celebration of their lives, and it's helping to, it helps you to celebrate them as well. And also, I feel like you give people the compassion that they need to realise that actually it is okay to grieve your pet. It's not a silly thing to do at all. Like, it doesn't matter if they are a guinea pig or a fish. You know, it's all right to feel that loss and to really explore that. And I've absolutely loved hanging out on your page and you know, exploring those feelings through your posts and things like that as well. But, you know, as you said during your intro as well, you do a lot of work with people, whether that be in person or virtually as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, people, if you are facing a pet loss or you've experienced one and you want a really great place to hang out, I would 100% tell you to go and head over to Beth's page. So you'll find her on Instagram on @ honoring our animals. So honoring our animals, and
that's spelled the American way now. not the UK way.
Not the UK way. No,
not the UK way. But yes, I invite everybody listening.
But it's okay.
That's right. That's right. Well, come on over to the page. It is a really beautiful community that we have there. Thousands of pet grievers, guardians who have lots of wisdom of their own to share. Mm. Every month, I do a live pet memorial service. So you can DM me for the service and submit your name and your animal's name. And I lead a live service where I will honor your name next to your beloved's name. That's a wonderful way to come together monthly to remember our animals and be together, grieve together. And I do put out twice daily content with tips and tools and ideas and support and compassion to really help people feel validated to grieve, to feel empowered to grieve. And offering very practical ideas. And then, of course, yes, if anyone's looking for more support, I work with people in a variety of ways. I work mostly virtually with people. I have many clients in the UK, so I would love to work with anybody all over the world. And I do that in a variety of different ways, but give me a call. We'll talk about it. We'll see what feels right to you and whether that is anticipatory grief or post-loss grief and everything in between, or you're thinking about the new animal and you want some feedback, we can do that too. So I look forward to connecting with all of you either on Instagram, Honoring Our Animals, or my website, which is honoringouranimals.com. I also have a newsletter if you just want some weekly pick-me-ups in your inbox to support you about your grief and give you some new ideas to think about. You can sign up for that too. So lots of ways for us to connect and be in touch.
No, honestly, it's been beautiful having you on, and a real honor to speak to you about all of this stuff, because it's not easy, and your page has definitely helped me and given me that space to realize that actually it is okay to feel like this, and it is okay to still feel like it even when we have our new animal at home as well. So thank you so much for joining me.
It's You're been welcome.
Amazing
thank
to
you.
Have you on. Thank you.
Yes, my friend. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of Mum's Work and Chaos, please make sure to subscribe on whatever podcasting channel you're listening on at the moment. Or if you'd like to get involved, feel free to email me at mumsworkandchaos@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @mumsworkandchaos. See you then.